Leading Edge Medicine provides only general medical information. Since everyone's individual situation is unique, you should consult your own physician before taking any action related to your personal health. All content of this program is intended for general informational purposes only. Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians. All while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you the opportunity to participate in the show. Now, here are your hosts for Leading Edge Medicine, Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat, along with their co-host, Lynette Morgan.
Good morning. I heard birds chirping.
I saw light.
Oh, I heard frogs. That means spring is on the way.
And there's some flowers on the trees.
Shrine,
I wanted
yes.
to ask.
A few buds.
People say, yeah, there are buds, and there's,
wow.
they're starting. Some are starting to bloom.
Yes, let's hear it for global warming.
Yay.
Hooray!
I think it's all because of the groundhogs yesterday. You know, most of the time they say the groundhog, you know, Punxsutawney Phil will predict six more weeks of winter.
Right.
And about 20% of the time it's the opposite. And this, they all across the country said
and
spring.
It's
early.
Right. It is. Well, and that's what he said.
Yeah.
Early spring.
So that's why. That's why.
That's
why. The groundhog. Groundhog's Day. But wow, that was a wonderful sound. I actually drove with my window down, cracked, so I could hear them because I heard them right when I got in. And it was like, oh, that means spring is coming.
Indeed.
Love that. Yes.
Indeed. Yeah.
Oh, welcome to Leading Edge Medicine on a beautiful Saturday morning, a weekend where we probably won't get any rain. So that's nice. Maybe some
right.
sunshine. A lot of people are going to be outside. And if you didn't plan to, plan to park a little further away.
I wish.
Go on that walk.
I'm going to be inside today.
You are?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because I'm... My daughter is fencing down in Portland for today and tomorrow. And so
right
after the show, I Uber down to the train station and take the train down to Portland so that I can have dinner with them tonight and spend the night. And then tomorrow I will be helping to strip coach her. You know, when she's on the fencing strip, then I will be coaching her through, you know, her matches. And, and then we drive back tomorrow evening when she's all finished, so.
Okay, I love that. You should have a beautiful train ride down today.
Yes, yeah, well, I have downloaded a fair bit of stuff to work on the way.
Okay.
I've taken
of
this
course.
Train ride often enough that I no longer like to look at the rundown, dilapidated buildings on either side of the tracks.
Yeah. Why not?
I don't know. This gets boring after a few towns.
Okay.
But, yeah. So no, I will spend today on the train, or first here, then on the train doing my my homework, and then tomorrow I'll be in, you know, the sporting center just
nice.
Doing fencing.
Very
so,
good,
yeah. Awesome.
And Dr. Umat,
Well, I've been working during the weekdays, but
yes.
we had a little bit of unplanned travel come up on the weekends. And last time I told Jerry, he looked at me, and goes, "Now where are you going?"
That's right. Well, that's what, 3 or 4 weeks in a row you weren't here.
Wow.
My goodness.
No. We missed you.
Well, thank you. It's nice to be missed. I missed being here, but, you know, the work upstairs has been busy. Clinics have been busy, so this was just a little unplanned getaway.
Okay.
But now I'm back, and now I'm here. And I'm not going away anywhere for a while.
Okay.
So.
And the big game, Super Bowl,
yeah,
coming up here. What are you? You're the football person in our crowd here.
Well, the 49ers and the Chiefs on February 11th.
Okay.
So, but, you know, and
who are you rooting for?
I would not have guessed. It doesn't matter. I
okay.
I just want to watch a good game.
Okay.
It doesn't matter.
Well, but you're going to watch it in front of the TV.
Or, yeah. Watching and in front
Taylor
of the TV.
Swift.
Well, Taylor Swift will be there to support her guy and
there
the Chiefs.
You go.
Yeah. And she's allowed. Why not?
She is.
Fun to watch her support her team.
There'll probably be some protesters there, though, because after all, she flies in her private jet, spewing carbon dioxide into the atmosphere.
Oh, no. Oh, boy.
Can't make everybody happy.
That's right.
Sometimes I think you can't make anybody
happy. That's right. Oh,
There's always somebody has something to say.
Right.
Anything you say, somebody's going to bitch about it.
That's right.
Well, except on our show, we talk about health.
Well, sometimes though, we bitch a bit too. But
well, it's okay if you do. Just, you know.
Well, that's right. I am the chief bitchologist.
CBO.
That's a new one. I've not heard him say that before.
You know, I came across an article yesterday on BBC. You know, I don't watch much American news. The American news sites all tend to be so totally partisan. Mm-hmm. There are those that, and nowadays we don't have left and right. We have pro and anti-Trump.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I watch Al Jazeera for most of the international news, except the Middle East. Now, Al Jazeera is a Muslim, and so they are firmly pro-Palestinian, anti-Israel. But other than that, other than Middle Eastern news, they get a very good, even-handed approach to most of the world news. Mm-hmm. And I do the BBC mm-hmm. every day. And I actually get the most even-handed evaluation of American news off the British broadcasting.
Yeah, you have to go somewhere else.
You can't get it in America.
Not anymore. Yeah. You know, there was a time when we actually did news,
but it's all commentary and opinion now. You know, and whatever side you're on, you'll find quote news that is all opinion on your side.
That's right. And you had to have the news be factual, and you would not report it unless it was factual.
So I get it reasonably factual out of the BBC. So,
okay.
And in Asia. You know, anyway, I've got sites for each of the news areas. But in the BBC, I came across a wonderful article. Glioblastoma is a brain cancer, and it is one in which I have a special interest because one of my children died at 40 of a glioblastoma and left a wife and three children behind. So that is a disease that I especially loathe because it is 100% fatal. Mm-hmm. And then I have a very dear friend whose wife just died of a glioblastoma a few months ago, and he is currently working his way through the grief process. Yeah. So I found this article interesting. There's a team of doctors out of Australia, although one of them is now based in the U.S. and the other is still in Australia. And they are the ones who actually did most of the research work on malignant melanoma, another nasty, high fatality rate cancer, and in ways to trick your immune system to find and kill the malignant melanoma cells. And it has raised it from a 95% fatal disease to a 70% survivable disease.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So, you know, their technique is fabulous. Well, it turns out one of these doctors had a seizure while he was on a vacation. And he got an MRI of the brain and found out he had a glioblastoma. And so they did a small biopsy, and it turned out to be the single most aggressive form of glioblastoma with a fatality rate of less than 1 year.
Okay. Wow.
Now, the less aggressive forms have a fatality rate of about 15 to 18 months. So,
not much more.
So, but less than a year for the form he has. And so this team got together and said, wait a minute. I don't feel like dying yet. And so let's see if we can do in the next few months what would normally take 10 years of research. Let's take the techniques we've used for malignant melanoma and apply them to my glioblastoma with me being the guinea pig.
Okay.
Now, most of their colleagues suggested against it, mm-hmm. telling them, you know, just let the oncologist do their thing. You don't have much time. Relax and enjoy what you can. And he said, hell no.
If I'm going down, I'm going down fighting. Wow.
So they jumped in and started applying their research techniques that they applied to malignant melanoma to glioblastoma, making all kinds of procedural shortcuts to get it done in a matter of months instead of years, and basically developed a vaccine for his glioblastoma. They actually did a little burr hole, drilled a hole, got a little tiny piece of the tumor, developed, ran its genome, and made a vaccine aimed at that particular tumor's genome, injected into him intravenously, and then watched the tumor shrivel up and disappear. And he's now been alive for a year and has no symptoms and no signs of reoccurrence and no tumor visible on the MRI.
What?
Yes.
Wow.
This is good news.
Yeah.
Now he may reoccur and it may come back and he may die. They're going to have to watch this for a while. And then, of course, if it does reoccur, will it respond to the second treatment? Mm. You know, they don't know.
Right.
But this is what researchers can do when they totally ignore the government.
Yes.
And they totally ignore their colleagues and they simply say, my life is on the line. I don't care about your rules. I'm going to see what I can do. And you just happen to be a world-class researcher
yes,
who's just
already.
Done this for another fatal cancer.
So this was in Australia?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. And it was published in the BBC. I saw no hint of it in American news, of course not. Or
no.
in America's medical news. Because why would they want to publish something about someone who ignored all the powers that be?
You know? And is still here.
And is still here. Yeah, and has may well have made the breakthrough of breakthroughs for glioblastoma.
Wow.
Yeah. So that was kind of fascinating to me.
It is fascinating.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, two doctors who happen to have made a fortune off their last discovery, of course, so they have unlimited resources, had the team, had the knowledge, had the resources, and just told every government agency and every professional society on the planet take a hike. They were doing it. And they did.
And they did. And it worked.
And it seems to have worked.
Seems to be working. They're having positive results.
They had a strongly positive result, and he is quite encouraged. But, you know, in his public statements, he's saying, you know, I could still die. It might come back. But right now, a year in, when I should be dead, I have no symptoms and no signs of residual tumor.
Wow. That's pretty fascinating.
That is good news.
Yeah.
How old was the doctor? Just wondering.
You know, I don't know. I should Google
his name. Because he was still
practicing,
was he?
Yeah,
still?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I've got his photograph here. He looks like he's maybe in his early 60s.
Okay. Mm. Okay. Probably with a huge smile on his face.
He has quite a smile on his face. Yeah.
I would too. That's a great way to start the show today with some good medical news.
Yes. Especially something
encouraging.
Realm of cancer.
Yes.
Where usually it's doom and gloom.
Yes.
Yeah. So
right.
This is very encouraging.
Well, and of course, you know, if this works for the glioblastoma and we now know that it works at a high success rate with the malignant melanoma, what other refractory, nasty cancers can we now apply these same general techniques to?
Yeah. And, you know, the biologics have done very well. The immunodrugs for malignant melanoma, they really changed the landscape in oncology when they came along a few years ago.
Yes.
And before that, there was really nothing. So skin cancer and malignant melanoma was the first one where they gave a lot of hope.
Yeah.
So, oncology is becoming very important. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we're finding that a lot more people are affected by cancer nowadays as well. And younger and younger people, and there's very little that we know about why. We just know that there are causes and we don't know what causes. Like, we know, for example, smoking causes lung cancer, and we know that exposure to sun can cause skin cancer, so we can take measures to prevent that. But there aren't many other things. We know obesity for other cancers, but how many people listen to that? You know? So finding new things and new ways to treat cancers that were untreatable is just life-changing.
Yeah.
Yes.
Life-saving.
That's right.
Very much so.
Of course, these guys got away with giving the middle finger to all the authorities in the world simply because they weren't treating patients.
Yeah. They were treating,
he was treating himself.
I'll do what I want. And, this is my life.
Yeah. You know, so... So all those things about what you can and can't do to patients simply didn't apply. It was
not to him.
Just him for himself.
Wow. So. All right. That's a great way to start a show today.
Yep.
Yes. This is Leading Edge Medicine. We invite you to call in with your questions. We had so many calls last week, back to back to back to back. A couple of them we weren't even able to get to. So if you have a question for Dr. Samira Umat or Dr. Jerry Mixon, today is the day right now to call in. Phone lines are open for you. Here is that number to get through. It's 800-465-8770. That's 800-465-8770. We'll be right back with more Leading Edge Medicine. We're here. Good morning. It's Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat in the studio on this first weekend
Absolutely.
Of February. Do you say February, doctor, or February? It's hard to stick that R in there, but it is February.
February.
Yeah, it always trips me up a little
but
bit.
I so. Generally don't say February.
I just say, it fast.
February.
February. Yeah, get it in there quick. Oh, boy. So that was good
gloss
news.
Over it.
Yes. We're taking your calls, your concerns about your health, aging, maybe a new medication that you're on or some symptoms you're not really sure what's going on with you or a loved one. Please give us a call. The phone lines are open, 800-465-8770. And we are going to dive right in and head south to Olympia with Glenn on the line. Welcome, Glenn. Good morning.
Good morning. Spring is here, in my opinion.
Yeah,
yes.
Well, I hope that your fantasy is true.
Yes.
Well, down here, I have what I call the Davies. It's the winter change. But anyway, the sun, I've got trees out in front of my property.
Uh-huh.
And in the wintertime, for about 2 months, the sun never hits my yard. And,
yes.
And now the sun is so high, I'm actually starting to get sun in my yard again.
Wow. Okay.
So winter is over, in my opinion.
All right. Well, see, I usually get up at 5, have my breakfast, and by around 6 or 6:15, I'm out on the trail and doing a few miles. But if I can't see the trail and I have to use my headlight, it's still winter.
Oh.
When I can see my feet without a headlight, now it's spring and I'm ready to go.
And what was the verdict today, Dr. Mixon?
It's still dark. It's still dark when I start. So.
Oh, was it really?
Oh, yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Well, I was out about 10 after 6 this morning and, you know. So.
Yeah, actually, yeah, yesterday I came in very early and it was pitch black.
Yes.
It was just dark.
Yeah. Oh.
So when I go to work and it's dark and I come home and it's dark, it's still winter.
So.
Right.
Wow. Well, Glenn, what can we do for you
on
this
help you today,
beautiful
Glenn?
Day?
Well, I've got some good news and some bad news. As far as I can tell, I'm a very fit, healthy 70-year-old man.
Okay.
And I'm a Vietnam vet, somewhat like you are, and I'm dealing with the VA, and I've had numerous headbuttings with those guys.
Yeah.
But anyway, they gave me this colorectal test thing, and it says your FTT card was abnormal. Colonoscopy is recommended.
Right.
And I'm I am somewhat apprehensive about that. I know one of the 13 men who went to the moon went in for a colonoscopy, and they killed him.
Yep.
And so I'm not really big on that idea, even including the unbelievable procedure they put you through in preparation for the colonoscopy.
Yeah, as far as I'm concerned, the prep is the worst part
that
of colonoscopy.
Is the worst, yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, well, so you spend all night pooping. Hmm.
But, yeah, and the thing is according to the doctor I was talking to here about this, she said they put you out.
Well,
they do this, and
they
you
do kind
you've
of.
Said they and you've said in the past that older people really shouldn't be put out unless they absolutely freaking have to, mm-hmm. because our bodies aren't real happy with being put out.
Old brains are fragile and don't recover from insults very easily. But let's talk about your situation here a little bit, okay? Because I think maybe I can put your mind at least partly at rest, even though I'm going to do it by raising your anxiety level just a bit.
Okay.
First, colon cancer is, in older people, often a fatal condition, and it's not even a very nice way to die, okay? So you do want to avoid uncontrolled colon cancer. You don't want to wait and ignore it until you have symptoms. That test they gave you, that Cologuard test, is basically they test part of your stool, and they're looking for genetic markers that are released from tumor and that will show up to say, yes, there's probably a cancer hiding up in this colon somewhere. Now, the good news, bad news is the older you get, the less reliable that test is, okay? And they don't recommend it for people over 75.
Because
once you hit my age, the incidence of false positives is unacceptable. About 15% of them will be false positives.
Oh.
So in other words, it'll tell you that you are positive for a possible cancer, and 15% of the time you won't have it. Mm. And so they say, well, you know, that's an unacceptable false positive rate. Well, my philosophy is I'd rather take the test anyway. Mm-hmm. If it's negative, it's negative. I don't have a cancer.
Mm-hmm.
If it's positive, well, then I've got to go get the colonoscopy anyway to double check it. Mm. So why not take the less intrusive, less miserable mm-hmm. test first?
Yes.
And if it's negative, go with it. Yours was positive. Now, at your age, the false positive rate is about 5 or 6% at 70. It rises rapidly after 70. So there is a 5 or 6% chance you don't have a cancer in there. But that means there's about a 94, 95% chance you do. Mm-hmm. And that means you really need to have somebody look. Okay. You don't want to wait till this thing spreads and gives you pain and is inoperable. So, you do need to get the colonoscopy. Now, as for the risks of the colonoscopy, they are extremely modest. Yes, once in a long time, you'll get a bowel perforation and somebody goes into real trouble and couldn't even die. The incident of that is a tiny fraction of 1%. Okay. It's like one case in 300 or 400 that will get a perforation. And of those, it's, you know, a small percentage of those would go on and die. So it's a very low risk. The anesthesia is extremely light. They don't really give you a full anesthesia like they were going to open your belly. See, if they're going to do a major surgery on you, they have to put you on an inhalant and IV anesthesia. They take you way down to the point you can't even breathe for yourself, and and you're totally dependent on the anesthesiologist to keep your brain oxygenated.
Mm, okay.
In this case, all they're giving you is a little bit of a intravenous benzodiazepine that will knock you out slightly, but mostly you're not really truly unconscious. You just don't remember it. It induces an antegrade amnesia. You don't remember what they're doing. So they'll give you a little squirt, you'll get a little drowsy, and the next thing you know, they'll be saying, come on, wake up, open your eyes.
Everything looked good, or...
Yeah. And, but they don't take you down deep. You don't stop breathing, you're You know, all your autonomic reflexes are still intact. You're just not going to move and squirm on the table when they're trying to get this thing 60 centimeters up your rectum. All right. 60 centimeters.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I was way off by my guess. Okay.
So, anyway, that's the story. So I'd say if you've got a positive Cologuard, you need the colonoscopy. There's a high probability that you've got something bad in there. You need to find out. And if they look in and say, no, there isn't anything, you can breathe a sigh of relief. Mm-hmm. And hopefully they're finding this early enough, if it is something bad, that it's just a local resection and it's over with and you don't end up with a colonoscopy.
colostomy.
Okay. I'm trying to get colon in there. Colostomy. Long term.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, if, you know, it's a polyp, that's a little precancerous lesion, they can even get rid of it right then.
Yeah. They can do it when
they're
under.
And so, you know, you want to hope for the best scenario so that if they do see something, they'll just get rid of it, nip it in the bud, and then it won't be a problem for you, hopefully.
That's right.
Okay, second question.
Yeah.
If I go in for the colonoscopy and they find out that I do have colon cancer, at 70 years old, how long before it will actually bring me down, and what would happen if they go in and find that I have colon cancer? Would they operate on me
right on the
right
spot
then and there?
Probably not. Probably what they would do is, if they see something suspicious, they'll biopsy it. They'll take a little device and just pinch off a small piece of it and send it to the lab.
Yeah.
They can do genetic studies on it. They can get a good idea of how aggressive and how nasty this tumor is. Colon cancer, like all cancers, has a wide spectrum. Some are very slow-growing, indolent tumors that don't give us much trouble very fast. Others are very aggressive things. We have to get in and do everything we can right away. So they'll do a little biopsy. They'll confirm the diagnosis. They won't just look and say, oh, it looks like a cancer. And then when they bring you, once they got their firm diagnosis, they'll then do a staging. They're probably going to do a bone scans. They'll do MRIs. They want to see, can we see this tumor? Do we see any evidence that it's spread? Do you have enlarged lymph nodes down in your belly? Do we see liver lesions or bone lesions? So they want to say, how big a problem do we have? Then they make a plan. And so that when they operate, they're not just going in there and winging it.
Yeah.
And trying to make up their mind what to do on the spot.
Right.
They will have a plan and they'll let you know in advance. Here's what we plan to do. Here are the risks. Here are the benefits. Here's what we think is going to happen. Now, even there, any plan we make before surgery is a tentative plan. Because once you get in, you sometimes find things that all your testing didn't see. Mm. And so you end up changing your plans at the last moment.
But, that's right.
But in general, they're not going to rush it. Okay. A matter of a few days or a few weeks is not going to make a big difference.
Right.
So
right.
they're going to do some testing and evaluation and planning before they do anything else.
And you might need to see other physicians as well. Other surgeons might be involved in your care if they find something.
And it may also be the oncologist they'll want to get a consult on too.
Exactly.
And especially once they've got the biopsy. Mm-hmm. Once they have a piece of the tumor and they can actually say, here's what the laboratory says about it.
Yeah.
Then the oncologist can start making his plans for what he thinks will be necessary.
Right.
Yeah.
And then the best case scenario is, you know, there's just a little polyp, they get rid of it, and they tell you, okay, come back in 5 years. Mm-hmm. But if they find something, then there's more investigations and more thought involved, as Dr. Mixon said.
But this is important to do.
Yeah. Yep.
This is uncomfortable, yes, but so important, and for peace of mind, too. You'll know.
Yeah.
You're not going to sit and wonder what's going on, and you'll get some answers, hopefully.
That's right. You know, and when people say cancer, lots of folks just freak.
Yeah.
It is an anxiety-inducing sort of thought for a lot of folks, for most folks, in fact. There are some that are crazy and it probably doesn't bother them. But
I haven't found that person yet.
Not yet.
But most sane people get a bit of anxiety when they're told there's a cancer.
Well, not only that, Jerry, you know, the thought of testing for cancer is also scary to people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
People don't want to know. Like, you know, the gallery test that we're offering, even when you first had me meet with the rep, even I said, well, do we really want to do this? You know? But yes, we do. And we do have another promotion coming up. We're hosting a fair next Saturday, in fact, at all three clinics. But maybe we should talk about that when we come back from our
good idea.
Yeah.
Anyway, any other questions you have for us, sir?
I guess not. I really don't want to go in for a colonoscopy, but you're kind of telling me. Well, first of all, they sent me a second test to test again, so I guess that'll eliminate the 5% error rate.
Yes, that's what that's all about, yes. They want to make sure that it's a positive.
Yeah, if it comes back positive again, I guess I'm pretty well screwed.
Well, but, I wouldn't say that, but yes, you're going to have the test anyway.
Yeah. I mean, remember, there are other causes for blood and stool, too. It doesn't always have to be cancer.
Yep.
So you want to find out what's causing it.
That was kind of my question is, blood in the stool, is that, what else can cause that?
Oh, that can be from any number of things. You can have benign polyps that can bleed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can have little pouches, hemorrhoids, any number of things.
And even medications.
But this isn't blood that they're testing for. They're actually looking for genetic markers that are associated with colon cancer. So this is more precise than the blood in the stool test we used to do. So.
All right. Well,
okay.
Thank you very much for the call, sir.
You're welcome.
All right. Thank you for that, Glenn.
Bye-bye.
Yes. We're going to take a quick break, and we will be back with Lori. And we can take your calls as well. Phone lines are open, 800-465-8770. We'll be right back. We're live in the studio every Saturday morning at this time. We love when you call in with your questions, and we appreciate you listening to the show. Thank you for that. Here is that number to get through with your questions, 800-465-8770. My name is Lynette. I am here today with Dr. Samira Umat and Dr. Jerry Mixon, and we were talking to Glenn about the cancer that could be going on. There's a new test out that we're very excited about here at the clinics, and we've got another screening day coming up next Saturday.
As you realize, the cancer, the word itself conjures up fear, right?
Yes, and anxiety.
It's like it's the death sentence. Cancer is a death sentence, literally.
Well, that's what people think.
Well, they do, yeah.
But these days, it's not. We have things we can do for the vast majority, if we catch them early.
That's right. That's the key.
And that's the trick, catching it early.
Yeah.
And people are afraid to take the test because they don't want to know.
Yeah.
But what you don't know can kill you.
Exactly.
What you know, you can fight.
Right.
So, you know, folks, come get the gallery test. Mm-hmm. We're going to screen you for 50 different cancers.
Yeah.
If they're all negative, you go home with a great sigh of relief and say, wow, good.
Thank you.
At least right now I have no indications. You know, there's about 100 different cancers we know of. We only have good tests until now. We've only had tests for 5.
Wow.
Out of 100 cancers, we've had tests for 5.
Wow.
Now, suddenly, we have tests for 50.
This is what we've been hoping for years, and now
Now, I'll be happy when it's 100.
Yes,
you know, we check them all.
Yeah.
But right now, we can check you for 50 cancers. And yes, it's good you don't have symptoms. It's fine that you feel great. You think you're healthy. But let's confirm that.
Right.
Okay. Because if you're wrong and there's an early cancer hiding there that you don't know about yet, we want to find it while we can cure you.
Sure. Mm.
Do not wait until you're having symptoms and it's already spread and now your survival rate has gone way down.
Yeah.
Okay. So get over your fear of knowing.
Yeah. Okay?
It's the not knowing that'll kill you.
That's right. You know, in all, in the last few years that we've been offering this test to our patients, we've had very few positives come back.
But we have had some.
But we have had the positives. What I'm relieved about is that in each positive case, our doctors were suspicious about it anyway. Patients may have denied it, but the doctors were suspicious that there might be something lurking. Mm. So it wasn't like this was a huge shock to us. So the thing is that if you go ahead and do the test done, then we can help you do something about it. The sooner you find out, the more likelihood that this will not impact on your lifespan as much. If you wait for it to spread to another organ, then there's a guarantee that they will not be able to do much for it, or that it'll impact on your lifespan. That's just going to happen. Mm-hmm. By the time it's spread, and if they find out at that stage, then it's a little late to offer you the best treatment. So for that purpose, we offer the Galleri test. All longevity patients can take this anytime. Mm-hmm. But for patients that are not with longevity but are interested, they have to come in, fill out a little questionnaire. We'll do the test. We'll have to meet with the doctor. We'll give you the answer. And you can do it on next Saturday in all of our clinics. And especially this month in February, because February is Cancer Awareness Month, and yes, we want to spread the word about it. And so all three clinics will be open. But you do have to have an appointment.
Yes, that's important.
With that, we will also do the longevity test. Mm-hmm. And the Galleri test, you have to pay for that separately. But for the longevity test, we'll do the DNA age, which is a methylation test, which is a $300 test. So for $595, we'll do this $300 test, and we'll do the longevity test. So you're basically getting a lot of testing done when you choose to come in for this Galleri mm-hmm. test. And then we'll also give them a relief factor, a bag of relief.
Yes.
So a lot going on. The team's super excited that you're coming. We're preparing for you. They're planning staffing. So for that purpose, please just give us a call so mm-hmm. we know that you are coming, so we can plan for your visit. We can have your paperwork and stuff ready. Yes, it is a fear, but I think start of a new year, new resolution, find out what's going on, and then that way you can plan and enjoy the rest of the year.
Yes.
Then you'll know for this year I'm done.
That's right.
Yes. Oh, here is that number to call, and you can do that right now to schedule your Galleri test at any one of our three clinics, Linwood, Kirkland, and Tacoma. This is next Saturday, February the 10th. You do need to call for your appointment. Here's the number, 866-86-YOUNG. Does that sound familiar? That's the number we like to keep with this number because it's so easy to remember. 866-86-YOUNG. And you know what? If you talk into your phone or your car when you're calling and you can't remember all the numbers, just 866-86-YOUNG gets you right there.
You know
it
what?
It worked.
Serious smart.
Yes. Dr. Mixon, I loved the two promotions that you did for us, the 2 3-minute snippets about what we offer.
Little videos.
It was really, really cute. I really enjoyed it. Very nice perspective.
I love that.
And call to action. And then you said 866-86-YOUNG, and then somebody was nice enough to put the number down at the bottom.
Yes, yes. Because sometimes people need those extra numbers, and that's true.
She edits my videos.
That's right.
Yes. So if you want to see Dr. Mixon
She's
looking cute.
She's done a good job.
Yeah. Is this on our website yet? Can we see
yes.
this?
Okay. I don't know if it's on the website. They're sending out emails.
They send it out as
oh,
emails.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah. And I've got a couple of videos that we've now put out on YouTube, and we'll have another one will go out on Monday.
Very good.
Yeah, so.
All right.
Yay.
Okay, are you ready for another phone call? I love that. Yes, not only radio, but TV too, and
YouTube
video.
And YouTube now, yeah.
And YouTube, yes. Pretty okay. soon we'll be seeing him do TikToks. Can't wait for that. All right. Let's go to Ken Moore. We have Lori on the line. Good morning, Lori. How can we help you?
Good morning, you all. My daughter had an ultrasound. She's 32 years old, and they found a cyst on each ovary. One of the ovaries has two of them. It's not cancerous, and she's going to go in the end of February and talk to a surgeon. And the OBGYN told us that they'll probably have to have she'll have to have surgery to have them taken out. The question is, they don't know if it's endometriosis, and what are the signs of endometriosis, because she does not have any pain, but she does have a little bit of pressure on the left side when she ovulates.
Okay. If she's not having pain with menstruation, that's probably not endometriosis. Probably just cysts.
Okay, that's what I kind of thought.
Yeah, because endometriosis is where the endometrium, the lining of the uterus, grows each month as your body is getting ready to get pregnant. And that endometrium grows thick and luxuriant. And then when your progesterone levels drop about a week or so before your period, that endometrium withers up and dies and falls out. And it drains out the cervix. And that's what that menstrual blood is the endometrium sloughing off from the lining of the uterus. Some unfortunate women, part of that endometrium, instead of going out through the cervix and vagina, actually refluxes about through the tubes. And you get endometrium growing out in the belly, usually around the ovaries or attached to the bowel. And then each cycle, instead of getting just menstrual blood, you actually bleed inside your belly when that endometrium sloughs that is now in ectopic sort of areas out where it's not supposed to be. So if she's not getting pain, it means it's not sloughing, it's not bleeding out there, and so unlikely to be that. More likely, just some multiple cysts.
They said it was just a simple cyst.
Yeah.
And the simple other side cysts. Was two little ones that were in there.
Okay. Are they attached? Are they what we call a complex cyst, where it's got, more dense material inside the cyst?
I don't know. All I know was the measurements were 4.7 on one of them, and they said if it's 5.2, they go in surgically and remove it. They'll watch it, but my daughter wants to go in and have it done, taken out right now.
Okay. Yeah. Simple cysts, the vast majority of women form at least one cyst each month because that's a cyst that forms, and when it ruptures, it releases the egg. And that's why some women have a little ovulatory pain mid-cycle when the cyst is rupturing and the little cystic fluid is irritating. Some women have what we call polycystic ovarian disorder, in which they have lots and lots and lots of cysts on their ovaries. I mean, they have dozens of cysts. Those women tend to be heavy, have high blood pressure, and a whole lot more body hair than most others. They have an abnormal processing of androgens and estrogens. So, but if she's only got...
She weighs 120 pounds. She's fine.
So not likely to be polycystic ovarian disorders.
Yeah.
Then, yeah, the only reason I would say they would want to go in is if you've got a complex cyst, a cyst in which it's not just a simple fluid-filled cyst, but you see things inside. It could be a teratoma, which is basically an egg that didn't get released to be fertilized, but somehow it actually started trying to grow as though it were going to make a baby all on its own. And these will sometimes form hair and teeth and fragments of bone and stuff, parts of a person, but not in any organized manner. And once in a long while, they will get really big and can cause significant problems. And a very small percentage of them can even become malignant. And that's why if they're getting very big, and that is more than about 2 inches in diameter, they take them out.
Okay. When she was 16, she went in she would not have a period for a couple of months. We found out that she was low on estrogen, so she went on bioidentical hormones, and she still to this day is on them. And we're just waiting for the measurements to come back. And they told her that there's a patch that they can use to not have a period or to stop her periods. Mm-hmm. And maybe the cysts would go away. And I thought, I don't think I like that idea. I said, that worries me. And so she didn't know if that's the right way to go, or it's not caused by... missing a period, it's not because of low estrogen, is it?
too much estrogen or not enough estrogen can give you a regular period, either ways. But the primary cycle is estrogen with progesterone. And it's the progesterone. First, you have a high estrogen, then you prime it with progesterone, and the progesterone causes the endometrium to grow. And then a week or 10 days before your period, the progesterone levels drop suddenly very low. And that sudden drop in progesterone is what causes the endometrium to slough. That very low estrogen combined with a sudden drop in progesterone is what causes the PMSing, this severe emotional disorder that some women get in that last 5 days to a week before they menstruate. It's just a hormone deficit. They aren't hormonal. It's a lack of hormones that's triggering.
Non-hormonal, yeah.
That's triggering the mood swings.
Is there a family history of endometriosis?
Well, actually, her mother, whom I, had a chocolate cyst on my left ovary when I was 58 years old, and I had it totally removed. Mm-hmm. And I have my other ovary, which is fine. Mm-hmm. But I'm just hoping they don't go in there and decide they have to take it out, or one of them out. That's what I was kind of worried about.
Yep. Yeah. You know, because if she decides to bear children, you know, if she's already got a low estrogen, we don't want to complicate things by removing an ovary and dropping her hormone production even further. She's probably going to need the auspices of a good fertility clinic to really manage her. You know, manage her hormone balance to help her get pregnant if she decides to.
Yes.
My daughter went through this, Lori, and she's due with her first baby in 4 months. So,
wow.
A good outcome having to deal with these.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Yeah. Well, thank you for the call, ma'am.
All right. Thank you very much for your information.
Sure.
Yeah. Bye-bye.
Good luck.
All right. Thank you with that information, Lori. All right. We're going to head to Stanwood. Warren is on the line. Hi, Warren, and welcome to the show.
Hi, good morning. I'd like to give Glenn a little hope. My first colonoscopy was in 1990 before I turned 40. Mm. And I mentioned to my doctor I was passing blood, and he jumped up and got on it, and he did a colonoscopy, and I had one very small malignant or tumor that they removed, well, not tumor, but polyp, and the very tip of it was malignant. And at that time, my doctor told me if I hadn't have said something and done something, I possibly could have been dead in 5 to 10 years. I don't know if that's true or not, but his name was Edmund O'Connor, and I will forever be grateful to him. Wow. And I have an expert on colonoscopies. I've probably had 10 or 12 of them. And what I have found, yes, the purging process is not nice, but I kind of go into a fasting mode like a day or two before so that there is as little debris to clean out of my system as possible. Mm-hmm. And it certainly seems to help.
Well, good. That's a great idea.
That is encouraging.
Okay.
You don't have to, you're not trying to move a dump truck through your stomach.
That's true.
make it empty. But anyway, and it's not nice, but like I said, I've had 10 or 12 of them, and it's a reality. I have two questions. One is that I have a friend with vasculitis. And it seems to be just terrible. What is that, and what's it caused by?
Well, the word vasculitis means inflammation of the blood vessels, and we're normally talking about the arteries with a vasculitis. And most of them are autoimmune diseases where you've actually made antibodies that are attacking your own arterial system. In a severe case, it can be fatal. It can be severely damaging, debilitating, because obviously we require, those arteries to provide the blood supply to every tissue in our body. And if they become badly inflamed and start getting plugged up, you can cause strokes and heart attacks, vision loss, kidney damage.
Because it's blocking the blood supply.
That's right.
Yeah.
So you can do everything from losing a hand or a foot to, you know, to dying. Mm. So
it is autoimmune.
Mm-hmm, yeah. The vast majority of them, yeah. There's a few that you can get a vasculitis as a result of a blunt trauma and so on, where the, you know, there's just something that has irritated it, or toxins have, mm-hmm. you know, poisons basically. But the vast majority of these are autoimmune, where your immune system simply doesn't recognize that your arteries belong to you. Mm. And they think they're a foreign material, and they go in and try to destroy them, mm. which, of course, would destroy you in the process. The good news is we've got better drugs to suppress that now than we used to. We have some immune-modulating disease or medications, and you know, even the old standby steroids we used to use in high doses mm-hmm. 50 years ago mm-hmm. are still appropriate for some people. Mm-hmm. So, does that answer your question?
Yes, sir. One last thing. You came back from a meeting, and you had made the comment that every researcher there was taking rapamycin.
Uh-huh.
And I'm curious, what kind of doses, and were they particularly going after mental cognitive issues, or is this a grocery basket of other things that it has seems to have a positive effect on?
It's a grocery basket at this point, and the dose is uncertain.
Frequency is uncertain, the dose is uncertain.
Here's the thing. With rapamycin, it's the only drug we have that has been shown to extend the lifespan and the health span of every organism we've tried it on, from worms up through dogs and you know, primates. We are not certain about people yet. But since it works in every other creature on the planet, we assume it'll work on us too. The benefit appears to be dose-related. The higher the dose, the longer the animals tend to live. But what dose is the right dose? We don't know. Is once a week, twice a week, every other day, every day? What is the best dosing schedule? We don't know. In the animals, it doesn't seem to matter much. It seems to be the total amount they get in any given week that determines it. So whether they take smaller doses twice a week or three times a week or a little larger dose once a week, at least in the animals, we get about the same result. What is the proper dose? Well, we can't measure your lifespan with a blood test. You know, I mean, let's say right now you're 60 years old, and I give you a big whack of rapamycin. There's no test I can do that say, oh, now he's going to live 4 years longer.
Exactly.
Wow. And so we're looking at markers, and we're extrapolating from the animals. And probably the animal with the closest physiology to us is the dog, because dogs share our homes. They share our diets. They share our lifestyles. And their metabolism, being a large mammal, you know, large dogs are up around 100 pounds. They're pretty close to the size of a small woman. And so we're extrapolating to a large extent from what results we get with dogs. The difference in dosing with rapamycin from any other medicine is that because we don't have an endpoint, in other words, if I'm trying to lower your blood pressure, I give you a drug and I see what it does to your blood pressure. And then I look at the side effects and I say, okay, if I get X amount of blood pressure lowering and Y amount of side effects, this is my trade-off. Since we don't have a marker of benefit for rapamycin, we're generally trying to give you a dose that will cause no side effects. But that means we're probably underdosing you for longevity. If we're going to dose you enough to extend your lifespan, you're probably going to have to accept some sort of downside in exchange for that. But until we've given it to people long enough and enough people to see what our real effect is over the next 20 or 30 years of lifespan and look at the different doses they took, we're not going to know for sure. And that's just because we humans live too damn long and we're trying to live longer. And if you're like me, I'm 76 years old. I'm turning 77 this summer. I can't wait 20 or 30 years for someone to sort it out. Right. So in my own therapy, I tend to be pretty aggressive. I treat myself with higher doses than I would be comfortable treating my patients. And my reasoning, as I have said on this radio, is very simple. If I do something stupid and hurt myself, I won't sue me or my clinic. If we do something stupid and hurt you, we get ourselves sued. So with our patients, we are far more conservative with our dosing. Mm-hmm. Does that answer your question?
Is that helpful, Warren?
It is, and I'm, like I say, I'm 3 years behind you, so...
So you don't want to wait either, huh?
Well, yeah. You know, maybe this is maybe better.
There you go.
I'll tell you what, when we come back, I'm going to talk about longevity therapies at some extent. I know I'm going to make some people wait, but there's really some fun stuff that I don't always talk about. So when we come back after this break, I'm going to explain to you what I'm doing to me now, what I want to do to me in the future.
Ooh, okay, that's coming up. We'll take a quick break, Warren.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for your call. We'll be back with more Leading Edge Medicine. Stay right there.